Thank you so much to Katie Heffelfinger of the Katie Gallery in New York City. I really enjoyed the chat. I feel like you empowered everyone who listened, including me. If you want to see more of Katie, go to katie.gallery.com or search for katie.gallery on social media. If you're finding value in these episodes, please like, share, or consider sponsoring me on Patreon. As always, thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production. Music by Corey Knoxville. I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is a brand that represents a community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, courses, and coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for a 50% off discount on all of their products. That's B-R-O-O-K-E.
Well, hello.
Hey, Katie, how you doing?
Good.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for meeting me here. I love your work.
Thank you.
It is fantastic. And the way I found you, and I don't know if I think I told you this, but I found you on Quora, actually.
Huh?
You answered a question and I was like, oh my gosh, that is so great. So I was like, so then I looked you up and I saw your art and I was like, oh my gosh, she's so fabulous. But you answered a question and it was something like, why do you want to be an artist when there's like other jobs that pay the bills and like, why don't you get a real job or something like that?
Yeah. Okay.
Those weren't the exact words, but
I've been setting up on the street in New York City for 15 years.
Okay.
And for that, you know, my parents were artists, so I kind of had a leg up because I knew the system, I knew how it worked. And I've done fairs and gallery shows and stuff. And I actually was looking into being a doctor.
Cool.
Wife and a doula, you know, and kind of worked my way up.
Yeah.
When I kind of realized how much responsibility I would have for how much money I was making,
mm-hmm.
realize delivering paintings is a lot easier. In fact, you know, a lot of my paintings are about the same price as a birth. So it kind of got me thinking, like, you know, a little less liability, a little less nonsense, but oh, I love it. I think it's the best job in the world. And I don't want to say this, okay, but on the street in New York, right, you meet maybe what, a million people over my of those people, I'll say 1,000 of them, and this is my little nugget here. He's playing, so I've got a little on my lap here, and that's another great thing. I get to stay home with my little guy and let him get raised. Now,
hey there,
let me make my tip. This is Ryan.
Okay. Ryan,
Ryan, like the stars.
Oh, Ryan. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, of let's say 1,000 people, right, who go to do the art thing or who approach me and ask the question, I'm always like, you can set up right next to me. I'll show you everything I know. Let's do this. I want you to succeed. Let's go. I would say maybe 10% continue to talk to me. Most people run away because the people who I find get into art, and I apologize, or who do it as a, they don't want to make money. It's almost like a commitment. Like you get into finance, you're like, yeah, I want to make some money. Disney is what, a multi-quadrillion dollar a year industry?
Yeah.
It's based on the flying of a mouse, yo. You can make money. You can make tons of money depending on how well you market. And it's not what you're doing, it's how you're doing it.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's the main obstacle, I think, for most people. So like how did you find out how to do it? How did you find out how to become successful?
Again, I've given the information to people, right? I can tell you how to do it, mm-hmm. but the problem is in the execution because there's something in your brain that says, I make money as a waitress, or my dad made money as a fireman, or money is made only through my 9-to-5 job. I can never make it another way. And if you open up your brain and think, okay, there's thousands of ways to make money. Do I want to do, my online sales are one part of my life. My like social media engagement is another part of my life. You can make money from all of those different venues. And then if you have an exhibition level, it's like everything pulls together. So I like to think of my business as running from multiple income streams. I'm going to say seven that I can think of off the top of my head. Like commissions are structured a little differently than, let's say, my corporate clients. I
Okay.
meet all in the same place. I've had this space that I've set up in New York City. By the way, since 1977, it's been codified into law
Oh.
and set up on any street corner in New York City for free of an exhibition of any size. If you're setting up in the parks, your booth has to be 5 feet long. I'm sorry, 5 feet high, 8 feet long, and 3 feet wide. You
Okay.
can put that up anywhere. Now, I'm sorry, if you can't make at least what you would make as an office job, setting your stuff on a corner on the weekends, stop it. Stop
Yeah.
it. You can. It's just a matter of do I believe? I
Right.
had this example and it really, really hurt me. There was a lady who was a waitress, and that day I sold $7,000. I'm sorry, I've got the tickle in my throat.
That's okay.
$7,000 in art on the street that day. The piece that sold was something similar to this, but it was 8 by 8. So I've got this big display up, and there was this woman who did beautiful encaustics. And I thought, oh my God, these are gorgeous. She really needs to do it. She believed in her soul that she would only make money as a waitress. And so she showed up Saturday, felt like she was missing her shift,
Yeah.
didn't sell, didn't come Sunday. Now, one of the things I say when somebody goes out to work is you got to have something for the whales. There's big fish floating around. You've got to for the regular little fish, and
Yeah.
you've got something to give away for free.
Okay.
And one of the ways that I have become, to the degree of survival that I have, these are my little cards, and these are
Oh.
actually part of the process, and they're like my test strikes for
Yeah.
this. It happened about maybe 20, well, say 10 years ago that I started doing these, and I would leave them on the table. I left a box of the trash on the table, and somebody was like, "Are these for sale?" And I was like, "You know what? Let me just sign it for you." And I put my name, rank, and serial number on the back, my social media, and my phone number. And so everybody gets this little piece. These fed me during the pandemic. All these little guys flew back to me as orders. And so I was able to engage with the clients without having to force them to buy something. Also, you get a lot who have to have a wife look at it, or a husband, or their design consultant, or whomever, and you just give them the piece, and then you're good to go. If you're giving them a card which doesn't really represent your art, I think you're at a lack. You're giving yourself a deficit. So that's one thing that I think I do more effectively than some other. I actually won a ribbon at one of the shows I did in Florida for best marketing, which I thought was kind of
Right.
hilarious.
That's awesome.
Another thing I do is that I'm not here to work for a framer. I sell most of my things unframed.
Okay.
So allow the client. Now, this has been years and years of this. So what I find fascinating is if I'm to put this beautiful piece in a frame, it's going to be, let's say, $5,000. Okay, we'll make it easy. Okay, if in the frame, it's going to cost me $1,200 to frame it, right? Now, here's where gallery math kills artists. And I think this is something that destroys careers. So, my piece to the gallery, I've spent $1,200 out of my day job or however I got it, right? Of painting. But the painting sold. Yay. Okay. So, $5,000 gets split in half, the gallery and me. And I've already paid framing. So, I made a whopping, like barely
Two.
$1,000. Like,
Yeah.
I made no money. I made like, I'm
Right.
sorry, my. Off that is, oh my God, it's $2,500 minus the cost. So it's I made $1,200. Me and the framer made the same amount of money.
Wow.
I'm sorry that my math was a little bad there, but that's
Oh.
basically my math, my calculations there. I was off.
Right.
But the that's how artists die. Right there
Yeah.
is a now if I'm standing on a street corner and I say, hey brother, you love this piece? Listen, I can do it for $3,600. If you want me to frame it, it's an extra 800 if I do it locally, or my New York framer is going to cost you about 1700, but it's going to be amazing. I
Yeah.
promise you it is worth it if you are okay with that. I have a high-end whale client who's like, heck yeah, I love that. We're send it to it's Chelsea Frames, by the way. He's amazing. My goodness. Of course, it's only happening on camera. Yeah, so that's one of the big ways is that I take framing out of the cost to my client and I
Okay.
allow client to select it. If you're a young couple from Brooklyn, I'll throw this over some stretcher bars for you, and I'll do that as part of the cost of the piece. Mm-hmm. But you are somebody who really wants a luxury presentation over your life. Mm-hmm. I can do well by, you know, coordinating with the framer with them, by putting the onus on the client. This way, if I like white frames and they have an all oak decor, I'm not throwing their idea. And I'm also not throwing away frames. Another thing that would happen is I'd have the piece, let's say, framed out at $4,000, right? People would want to cut me down to $3,000. Well, why didn't I just sell it unframed for $36 and then let them handle it?
Right.
And basically my business model that I think changes the game a little bit, mm-hmm. because a lot of those craft shows, I just went to Florida and almost died over the winter, have this, there's this perception that if it's not framed, it's not finished. Mm-hmm. While when you're working who are familiar with design work and you're working with people who are familiar with when I show a table of work, I show it all unrolled and I show it open. Mm-hmm. And these love this stuff. I mean, they love being able to touch the piece. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, can I? It's like I'm getting, it's like going behind the archives at the Whitney, you know, it's super.
Yeah.
And so people get involved with it at a different level. So I think that's another distinct difference that I do. I also therefore can bring hundreds of pieces in my van as opposed to bringing dozens of pieces in a trailer with everything else. And it's got Sharky's on point today. Sharky's going to help me out.
That's adorable. I love it.
So, and one of my proudest things is that, you know, I have been able to support my son and support my lifestyle on art only. And I've supported myself only with art since like 2008.
Wow. Yeah, that was something else. That was something in the thing that I read that was like, I supported, not only have you supported yourself with the art, but you said that all adult artists, all the adult artists, you know, are doing the same thing.
Right. When I grew up in this basically like imagine a gypsy camp, right? But we all go home to our respective houses, but we come together for shows. So I'd see all my brothers and sisters in arms and cousins in arms at Gaithersburg. And then we say, okay, bye. And then I'd see them up at Armonk in New York. And then we say, okay, bye. And we'd see in Virginia. And oh, hello, there you are in Nova, you know? So I grew up knowing that it was possible. And I think the conceptualization of the fact that there is a crew of literally thousands of people who make their life this way. Mm-hmm. And maybe they, I don't know, pressed flowers in clay. I remember there's an artist named Cricket that I knew growing up. And mm-hmm. I was so jealous because her family had like a really nice van and mm-hmm. it was all hooked up. I got to go to their studio at one point. It was gorgeous. It was like a pole barn that went on for days and their house was awesome and they had property. And I was just like, nice. You know, what are my parents doing wrong? And I think a lot of my whole process is that I am standing on the shoulders of these amazing artists that I got to grow up seeing. When I grew up, I worked as their like assistant, their booth assistant for $10 an hour and 10% commission. And I was always everybody's second best salesman.
Oh, wow. That's so awesome.
Yeah. The sales aspect, I think, is really nerve wracking because sadly, just like, I don't know, everything else in life, it's got to be earned through experience. Mm-hmm. And of things that I lost on UPS, for example, and I hate to talk up FedEx, but FedEx doesn't lose them on me. I've never got damaged off of FedEx. I've never had a problem with FedEx. It arrives on time. UPS, not so
much. Right.
You know, knowing things like that, and can you imagine the pain of that? I also don't take money ahead of time for a shipped item. So let's say I put the piece in the box. We've agreed on a price, you know, it's $300. And I ship it, I don't receive the money back until they receive it.
Okay.
I've never been ripped off except I think one time in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And even then it was, I knew the client wasn't worth the trust. You know what I mean? But I, just because one person out of, you know, dozens is a jerk doesn't mean I'm going to change my policies.
Right.
It just allows, I'm faster at recognizing, oh, that type of person is a jerk. So you have to do a lot of learning through example.
Okay.
Or learn through doing it. And you can't be afraid to make mistakes because, you know, one time I had the pleasure of a billionaire. He was the man who actually coded Facebook. He's self-made, rough.
Wow. Right?
And so I'm so psyched to have him at my table. I don't know who he is. I treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I want this one and this one and this one. And his wife is named Marike. And Marike was like, are you okay? Is that enough? And I think at the final price of all of them at the time was $5,000. And it was a big sale for me at the time. I was like, woo!
Yeah, yeah.
Annihilated in the mail. Wrong piece got sent. I called the client who got the piece that they should have got. They don't know anything about it. You know, like it was horrible. This wonderful client was like, oh, cool. Oh, we'll just redo them. And that's when I first learned that the higher price that you're paying for the art mm-hmm. or that you engage in, the better off you're going to be. Okay. I find I'd rather handle a client over, let's call it $3,000 mm-hmm. than handle a client under like about $1,850, $2,000.
Yeah.
There's a completely different attitude about it. And the way you get treated, I would say, let's say my average $1,850 client, incredibly demanding, yeah. thinks that literally should do everything for them. Meanwhile, the billionaires and the people who I actually want to be serving,
right.
you know,
they're in the back.
They're really fantastic. And yeah. I think that also speaks to keeping your prices high because you can only have so many, I call them touches in a day. Mm-hmm. If I'm 20 people and I'm going to have three closes, I want to make sure that I can quickly scan a crowd or scan my environment for the highest priced. And so what I've done in the city is I have two tables. I have terrifyingly expensive and pay as you wish. Mm-hmm. Terrifyingly expensive pieces are perfect. They are fresh off the production. They look amazing. They have no blemishes or anything like that. If they fall off or something weird happens, or, you know, it's maybe, I know this is crazy, not my best work. Occasionally that does happen. I have a pile. So the two tables, they both make the same amount of money in a day,
mm-hmm.
but I only have to sell one off the terrifyingly expensive table. By having the seconds and offs, mm-hmm. it gives people of all price points a chance to engage. Mm-hmm. And it also lets me see what can a client handle? Like, for example, right now in New York, if I have a price around $500 to $800, that's mm-hmm. very difficult for a middle-class client to engage with a piece. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, people who don't have those kinds of problems are happily selling. Like these guys behind me were a commission for
$3,600. Wow.
So that's the price point that's easy. At those numbers, how many do you have to sell a month to not get an office job?
Right.
And this job I do weekends only. I stay home with my kid. I watch far too many TikToks. And I have a really wonderful life. And I'm very lucky. I'm not lucky. Luck, as Pat says, your luck is for losers. I make it happen. And I think that a lot of people also don't have that. You know, 50 Cent has an autobiography that I read that every page I was like, no way, no way. And one of the things is whatever happens, it's all your fault. Did somebody steal all your money? You know, for next time.
Yeah.
And the truth, it's better for them to steal your money while you're only making $100,000 than it is when you start making millions.
Yeah.
It's better. Another thing, he talks about having control over every part. I do my own social media. Mm-hmm. I don't send out anything in the studio that I'm not doing. And then there was a time when I had a staff of 7 mm-hmm. and I'm making more money was coming in, but was more money coming to me? No, it was more going out in salary. Mm-hmm. So it actually really slimmed down to just me these days. I don't have anyone else in the studio, but mm-hmm. You have to go through that process to learn that process.
Right, right. That makes sense. So like what kind of staff would you hire?
When I used to have staff, I would kind of the goal of any artist, let's say and I've worked in other artist studios, like let's say you're, you know, a big name, Koons, Murakami,
right.
and stuff. You're going to have multiple studios with MFAs in there producing the work.
Okay.
I think is hilarious because when you do slightly less shows, they're like, oh no, it only has to be artist produced. Bro, every artist, every single one who's, once you get to a certain state, let's call it 100, 200,000, you can't make all those pieces yourself unless you're selling for 20,000 a piece. There's just no way, You need a showing body of 20 pieces in 3 shows for most artists of, you know, who are balling, you know? Those artists are going to have those back studios. In my studio, there were 3 people working behind the scenes, helping me with painting, cutting, prepping, and other things like that. And then there was 3 sales staff, including myself. I count myself as one of the sales staff. And when I was the only person putting paint on the surface, but there are other parts of the process.
Okay. And another question I had was, you were talking about you setting up a tent, you know, outside in New York. Don't you have to have like a license or permission?
I tensored are for juried shows and things like that. I like the sun to be on my work. And so I select areas that have really nice light. In the meatpacking, they have awnings. If it is going to be inclement weather, I would set up under an awning. Generally, though, because I'm so privileged, I only go out between 50 degrees and 80 degrees now.
Nice.
I don't go out if it's going to be winds over 15 degrees, 15 miles per hour, or any kind of precipitation. I kind of judge it. These days, my work has always been able to survive everything. In fact, my only natural enemies in New York City are the pigeons. Sometimes have issues with, but the new work, it was pigeon proof, which
pigeon proof.
That's a long time.
How do you make it pigeon proof?
I now use, I used to use 100% cotton paper without a fixative. Mm-hmm. Now I use a UV fixative and I use a smoother paper.
Okay.
Hold on for a second.
You don't like that?
I'm making a TikTok and I'm going to need you to settle down, please. Okay. I'm still going to talk to this lady for just a bit. All right. And you can play with the light switch if you want. You know what works.
He's adorable.
I actually have him. I don't want to get crazy, but we have a non-custodial father, right? And he actually got kidnapped 2 weeks ago.
Oh my God.
Most incredible experience. He was like, no, I'm not giving him back and you can't have him and you can't come in. And I was like, okay. And my partner was with me at the time, and he says that I turned into something he'd never seen before. And I like ran to the courthouse. I got the orders that I needed. And we showed up with like four cops to get him back. It was kind of great. And I mean, it's not a proper kidnapping, but it was a little bit. And it was just,
oh my gosh.
I'm glad to have him and so glad to just, you know. I'm older. I'm coming up on 50 now. And when I had him in my mid 40s, I was just like, no way. No, you don't want to do this. This is crazy.
Right. Yeah.
Every second brought me such joy.
Wow.
Even in the crazy, you know, even in whatever happens, but it's kind of awesome.
That's amazing. That is wild. And I think it's so great that you can talk about the kidnapping. Just like, oh, that's
minor kidnapping was itsy big, you know. Another thing is like, you know, okay, stuff is going to happen. You know, I still had to show up to shows. I still had work to do. I still have to get things done. And you can't let, it doesn't matter if it's a hangnail or a tornado, the show must go on. And that's something I sort of learned from growing up doing shows. Okay. I don't care what the problems are between 10 o'clock and 5 o'clock, we're selling. And yeah. If you have a problem at 2:30, no, you didn't. Because yeah. We have clients to talk to and we can handle whatever that is later. And I think that's one of my work ethic things that's a little bit frustrating. I actually fired one of my sales guys, my best sales guy, mm-hmm. because he suddenly wasn't available for me. He had another job mm-hmm. and it was exhausted. And it was Christmas time, so I do feel like Scrooge, but mm-hmm. he did hold sales time sacred. And there's just nothing, 2 to 3 p.m.,
yeah.
if you put your hand on your hip and you don't hit three people, your promoter didn't do a good job.
Yeah.
And you should be so engaged at that point in time of showing that literally nothing can stop it. Nobody should call. I mean, if someone calls me, it's going to voicemail. I am very focused about engaging with clients and engaging with my experience with them at that time, because it's almost sacred to me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. I think that's rare. And that's,
oh my God, I don't go to the bathroom. I apprenticed for a long time as a sales girl for a group of people that did art jewelry. And they were like that. You ate at 7 and they took you out to the nicest dinner you could find. But midday, you're going to be just fine. We've got sales to do. And ethic, you know, it's the difference between whether you make 10,000 or 20,000. It's the difference between whether you have to do another show and leave your kid home with a babysitter, or do you get to go home and put your feet up?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And also you had mentioned about in the statement that I read, you were talking about how you had clients who like, you had clients who were willing to pay the top dollar for your stuff and and that loved your work, which I can totally see why. But I mean, like, how do you find those clients? Because I mean, there's
by the quality of your work, they find you. If okay. I'm in a show and I have everything. I had the nicest client. He was a board member at RISD. Mm-hmm. He had sold like Trump Plaza spaces and developed them for his whole career. He was basically a New York City developer. Mm-hmm. And he would start show and he could have talked to anyone. And he saw one of the early versions of these. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to do a piece that was 8 feet long and 42 inches high for his above his sofa. Mm-hmm. It was a, and I can't quite explain. I didn't know who he was when I met him in the course of, I had to do the piece at his house because I was traveling on back home. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got to know him very well over the course of the day while I was making it.
Right.
And I guess what I can say is that your fans are going to be a certain kind of person. Like I can tell one of my people from mm-hmm. But when I've worked at other artists' booths, I can tell their type. Mm-hmm. There was one man I worked for, he did kind of African silk work, right? Mm-hmm. His client was always the older high school football captain and the cheer coach as mm-hmm. they were that person. Mm-hmm. And so very easy to identify his clients. My client is, you know, for the most part, a New Yorker. Mm-hmm. That's mostly because it's where I cut my teeth and where I really learned to sell and where I learned to paint. My colors, for example, if I go to Florida, mm-hmm. colors almost look gray. So I have to pop my colors a little bit, add a little more ultramarine blue, a little more teal. But an interesting fact that I found is that color has caused me to connect with richer people. For instance, if I put out a whole bunch of these little cards, right? Mm-hmm. The blue ones, green ones go next. But when I put a price tag on them, blue ones sell for $1. 35 cents on the dollar is how much you get for a green one. Every time somebody orders green, I know I'm going to hear price drop necessary because those colors don't reflect an affluent group. Let's say you go to the Hamptons, right?
Okay.
How are you going to fit in? And I saw this with some of the other artists. I did about 3 Hampton shows this year, and they have pinks and blues and stuff and greens that are going to do great in Florida. But there's a very austere sort of, you know, we want black, we want grayish, we want beige, something that pops, but we don't want to scare the neighbors. So I find that an affluent crowd needs an affluent color group and an affluent set. And this was proven to me. I had kind of figured it out at the table. But when I walked into Mitchell Goldbaum Williams' War Room I did a series of 2,000 originals for all their stores over the course of about 5 years while my paintings were with them before the pandemic closed them down. And all of them were in these tones. Basically, I looked at all these color swatches and they were just like navies, these tops, these things that I had learned that were the correct color group. Now that changes with millennials. I'm speaking specifically, I mean, to my target audience, which would be Gen X and boomers and of a certain social class. Mm-hmm. If I do bright red painting, that client is going to want me to do it 17 times. If I hear the client wants red, I'm like, oh, I'm doing this over and over again. Yellow is the only color where somebody bounced a check. And those yellow wants it so clean, it's not even funny. And at the same time, that 100% of my price point is a little hard for them to reach. So again, I don't have a lot of yellow in the collection. I will do it. But if I have it on the table, I attract a yellow client. If I have an orange on the table, the most paranoid clients I've ever seen. Like, they're like, I don't want you to know my address. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
A black painting, a 100% black painting, like with a single stroke of black. Mm-hmm. Good. That woman is so mean. The meanest woman I've ever seen. But if I do an 8-tone, like up to an 8 scale gray, mm-hmm. lovely people, beautiful work, I would do them again.
Wow. Would,
definitely. And I do a lot of those, but I have to be super careful. In fact, I use a kind of paint that I can't over, if I do it deeper, it just browns. It doesn't go to that black because I don't want to deal with that client. So a lot of times I will use the paintings and the colors to attract the client that I want. Mm-hmm. And for instance, let's say you are in Florida, you want some pinks, you want some Art Deco colors, you know, you want some teals, you want those colors because you're going to attract it, but you're probably going to attract a lower echelon client. And I've proven this throughout the country. And it's one of my favorite things about doing the work in general is these sort of social experiments.
Yeah.
But using color and design that attracts the best client and putting those pieces front. And let's say I've got some squidgy ones or some other ones. Those are not hidden, but they're not what I lead with. I lead with something that I know is going to draw in a client who is affluent enough and who it makes it beautiful. And even if somebody it's reaching maybe out of their price point or out of their, you know, regular socioeconomic group, their house is going to look amazing and their friends are going to be jealous.
Yeah. That's awesome. That is so interesting. So, okay. So what is, I have to ask, what is a, you said that a, what was the color that you said that the affluent people bought?
I don't know this for a fact, but I would call it Yale blue.
Yale blue.
Yale blue, as opposed to, let's say, another thing is if you look out over the sea of people that you're selling to, mm-hmm. another thing I do a lot is I'll go to a thrift shop mm-hmm. and I'll look at the color in the thrift shop of the region where I'm selling and okay. note any color outstanding. Like there are some regions in the South where men wear more maroons and pinks, mm-hmm. almost red. There's different areas like that. I'm sorry, I'm getting off your question. What color attracts the affluent is Yale blue and grayages. That's okay. still in most affluent communities where you're going to want to lean towards.
Okay.
If I was being your art consultant, but again, no one listens to Katie. This is bad. No one listens. And standing there doing these tests. Oh, I was going to say, when I look out over the sea of New Yorkers, the one color I see that everyone's comfortable with is the indigo. That's the color of jeans. And okay. that has become my main color. In fact, if you see everything here,
yeah, this is, I see that.
And that's what creates all these beautiful tones. Just like you can get a jet black denim, or not black, a super, super blue denim. Yeah. And also get that sort of washed out, you know, super acid wash light. And you can see all those tones in the pieces.
Yeah.
And because that's the color that if I look out over the crowd, I can see more than anything else. It's also how I identify what kind of a day is it going to be? Like there are cars that park along the street. You know, obviously, you know, if it's Hondas and Kias, it's not going to be a great day. But if you see those fancy, you know, sports cars, mm-hmm. but it's the same colors on the clothes. If I'm seeing a lot of, I just got off the boat from California or whatever, mm-hmm. Spain, I know there's going to be different color groups and that's going to bring a lower price point.
Okay. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
It is. I mean, I live and die by it.
Yeah. That's a
keep
good.
It red, keep it black, keep it blue. Those are fitted in communities. I apologize. I wish it was different, but yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh my gosh, Katie, this has been so informative and so awesome. I love this. Thank you.
Well,
so much for spending your
time. My big thing is that for every 1,000 people I talk to, one person comes and tries it. One person tries. And I hope that I reach that one person who just goes out and does it. And, you know, there's places all like New York City, all over the world where people can go and sell their art. Key West has a spot that you can just set up. Mm-hmm. Just do it. Just do it. And only listen to the people that buy. Everyone else.
I love that. Where can people find you?
I am at katie.gallery, and katie.gallery is my social media presence. So whatever you like, TikTok, the future MySpace, that's always going to be katie.gallery. And then I'm always on the street corner. If you're lucky, you can find me weekends between 50 degrees and 80 degrees. No wind, under 15 miles. I show up around 2 to 3 to meet clients, and I would love to see you there. I'm at 69 Gansevoort. It's the old Florent, or the restaurant where they filmed the that scene where the alien got shot in Men in Black.
Oh, wow.
Just at the Highline. So pretty much if you go to the Highline, you'll see me and the rest of the artists. There are about 10 of us that still set up there on a regular basis. And if you want to set up, I'm the crazy old lady you better talk to.
That's funny. It's who you know. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I will let you know when this posts. And if you could share it on all of your social media, I would appreciate it.
I sure will. And thanks for stopping.
Absolutely. And I'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And just the way she answered it, it was so eloquent, so fearless. And of course, I looked at her art right away. And I was like, wow, I have to have her on the pod. Not only is her art beautiful, but she's been doing it successfully for such a long time and has so many valuable insights for artists who want to sell their work. Enjoy.